A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 131. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are talking about Space Odyssey, Voyage to the Planets. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, we're talking about an interesting show called Space Odyssey, Voyage to the Planets, also known, I think, in America as Voyage to the Planets and Beyond.
That's right.
This is a show about a manned space exploration mission through our solar system. And it's presented to us in a sort of clear sort of documentary style, though it's quite obvious that they are speculating. But lots of interesting stuff in this show.
Yes, absolutely. This was a co-production between the BBC and the Discovery Channel. It was in 2004. And it definitely fits into what I like to consider speculative documentary, where it definitely is designed as a documentary and is meant to teach and inform, but it is based on this speculative mission, manned mission out to the planets that would take place sometime in the future. And it's actually an award-winning show with some very nice special effects in it and some very interesting things to say and lots of interesting science.
Absolutely, yes. And we were talking about space exploration in our previous two shows from the sort of very start of the space race. And here we are with, I guess, what you'd call the absolute cutting edge in speculation about space exploration. So it's great stuff.
Absolutely. A very different take on things, for sure.
Yep. So, the setup of the show, as we've said already, at some unspecified point in the future, a joint mission is launched by all the world's space agencies, a collaborative effort to put a crew of 5 astronauts on board the spaceship Pegasus and send this crew on a 6-year journey, which will take them to Venus and Mars, and then out towards the moons of Jupiter, Saturn, Pluto, right out to the outer reaches of our solar system.
Yes, it takes them on this 8 billion mile round trip through the solar system over the course of 6 years. And of course, it is all carefully organized and supervised by the staff of Mission Control. We have quite realistic Mission Control on Earth that is constantly communicating out to the crew of the Pegasus. And along the way, the crew has a number of different landings on different planets and moons that they have to deal with. And there are course corrections. There are accidents and things that go wrong. Even illness. There are all sorts of things that happen over the course of this trip.
That's right. A 6-year trip is going to have a lot of incident, and there's certainly a lot of incident in the 2 episodes of this show. So quite a lot of stuff for us to get into and talk about. But as ever, we want to talk about the characters. So we've got this speculative documentary. So we have characters. We have, for instance, Tom Kirby, who is the mission commander on board Pegasus. He is an American, played by the actor Martin McDougall. Very much the sort of like typical American, I suppose, astronaut. Very committed, intelligent and thorough. So he's our lead character on board.
And he really does take the commander's role, as you see with the space shuttle commanders and the International Space Station commanders, where it is the person who takes point and coordinates the things and is responsible for some piloting and so on. So it's quite a realistic definition of the commander for a modern space mission.
And then he's backed up by his other crew members. We have John Pearson, who is the flight medic, and he is a British character played by the actor Mark Dexter. He helps us with a lot of the sort of discussion of the medical aspects of the mission and talks to us about some of the science involved in actually having five people survive in a spaceship for 6 years and stuff like food and water and recycling and so on.
Yes, and we also have Ivan Grigorov, played by Rad Lazar, who is Russian, of course, and is the flight engineer. And we get lots of the technical things coming from Ivan. And he is also involved in doing many of the EVAs, the spacewalks, and some of the landings on different planets as well. So he is heavily involved in different things. It was also nice to see a Russian actor playing this Russian character, of course. And then we had Nina Sulman, played by Michelle Joseph, and she was the biologist, the exobiologist, in fact, who is a British character, and she is dealing with the search for extraterrestrial life and looking for microbes on different planets. And this is sort of a significant focus of types of things that they're looking at, is trying to discover if they can find signs of life, particularly microscopic life, on other planets or other moons within the solar system.
Yes, because the whole mission is a huge science experiment, and that's how it's portrayed. And, of course, they're also delivering an awful lot of science to us about the other planets in the solar system and space exploration. And again, to help us out, Zoe Lassard, played by the actress Joanna McQuinn, and she is Canadian and the geologist on board. And she explains a lot of the stuff to us about how the other planets develop and their similarities to Earth in various stages. And again, lots of science stuff to deliver to us. And she's particularly interested in exploring a couple of the planets and getting down there on the surface.
Yes, absolutely. One thing that was really interesting that they brought in with the character of Zoe Lassard was the idea that one of the particular advantages of manned missions is doing this geological work. And the geologists in real life are very often the people who particularly want to see manned missions, because those are things that the robotic probes really don't do very well. The geology is better done by manned explorers. This has been discussed in many space science documentaries. And they never particularly come out and say that in this show, but they certainly portray that these manned missions are particularly good at the geology, and we get that through the character of Zoe Lassard. And the actress was actually raised in Canada, so you get a pretty good Canadian accent, which is nice.
Okay, so that's our five strong crew, and then we have a few characters down on Earth in Mission Control. We have Alex Lloyd, played by Mark Tandy, who is the sort of mission scientist and does a lot of the sort of direct-to-camera science explanation for us, fills us in on a lot of the stuff that's going on, and as you say, Brian, explains to us several times why it's so important to have humans in space exploration to do the things that the robots can't.
Yes, and a lot of the time we see him talking to camera because he's being interviewed by the media, and television, you know, fictional television programs are interviewing this mission scientist. So that gives us his sort of direct explanations. And it gives us that for some of the other characters too. But that's sort of a very nice way of doing things. We also had Claire Granier, played by Hélène Mahieu. And she was a French character, and she was the flight surgeon. So, which is also a quite realistically portrayed role that you have on the actual NASA missions and so on. And she is in Mission Control monitoring the medical status and the health status of all of the astronauts. And she is the one who makes the call for what they can and can't and should and shouldn't do from a medical perspective, which brings Claire and Alex, the mission scientist and the flight surgeon, into conflict a lot of the time, where he is saying, look, we should go and do as much as we can for the mission and for the science. And she is saying, we have to hold back for the sake of the health and safety of the crew.
She has some tough calls to make as the mission progresses, doesn't she?
Yes, she does. And I thought that was handled very well and very realistically in this show, actually. We also have Fred Duncan, played by Colin Stinton, who is the flight controller and managing things there as well.
And again, a very sort of realistic portrayal of the flight controller as, again, that authoritative voice on Earth who runs the show from there, and pretty much what he says goes, doesn't it?
Yes, he tends to come into play when there is something that Alex and Claire can't agree on, or when there is a decision point or an issue that is of real paramount importance. It always comes down to him in those cases, although you see less of him compared to Alex Lloyd and Claire Granier.
Okay. And then, of course, we have, for a documentary, we have a narrator. And here we have the very calm and measured and reassuring voice of David Suchet, who, of course, is best known for playing Poirot on television. And I think his voice is quite recognisable here, Brian, and a very sort of calm presence for us.
Yes, in this case, he is not doing the Belgian accent that he does for Poirot. He's doing his natural English accent. And certainly does a good narration for this.
Pegasus, you are going to proceed with the final checklist for transvenous injection.
Copy that. Set sequence at 1-9 mark.
It is our destiny to explore the far frontiers of space. Last century, we took the first steps to the moon. Imagine we were ready to take the next giant leap. This is the story of a manned voyage to the planets. Humanity's greatest challenge and ultimate adventure.
So the first stop that the characters make in the journey is at Venus. And the Pegasus is equipped with all sorts of things, you know, basically everything that the crew needs for a 6-year voyage. And it's sort of an elongated ship with big solar panels on the sides and a large disc on the back, which is really a radiation shield that in many cases they basically need to point back towards the sun to shield against their solar radiation. They have a rotating portion of the ship that swings out and around on this elongated arm, and that gives some centrifugal gravity, which helps to allow them to grow some of their own food so they can have some fresh food. And it gives them some spaces where they can sleep and exercise and have about half of Earth gravity in order to be able to remain healthy and exercise and so on, and deal with this extended period in space.
Yes, and they do spend some time explaining the mechanics of all this to us. And for instance, pointing out that the astronauts need to spend so many hours a day exercising in order to sort of compensate for the effects of weightlessness on their bones and muscles. So it's all quite interesting stuff. They've also got the Pegasus making rendezvous at various points with pre-launched unmanned rockets, which are put into orbit around various planets. So there they can pick up drops of, in particular, hydrogen for fuel. But I presume they're picking up other supplies as well, possibly. And as you said, Brian, they've got the landing craft, which they will use to descend to various planets. And first up, as you said, was Venus. And we have Ivan Grigorov and Nina Solman in the Orpheus lander here, making a descent to the surface of Venus.
Yes, and you have Grigorov doing an EVA, walking out onto the surface of Venus. And you see that Venus is indeed, as we had been warned, a very hostile environment. Not everything goes to plan. You have some of the cameras and equipment they have set up failing under the intense pressure and intense heat that is there. And Ivan is looking to complete a mission that has some significance to Russian space scientists particularly, and also some more general measurements and science on the surface of Venus. And we certainly see that this is a very intense and hostile environment, and that has effects on the equipment and the astronauts as well. So they have the first time where they are dealing with these very hostile environments and how they have to deal with that and how things sometimes go right and sometimes go wrong.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it is interesting. We've got a very high-tech, cutting-edge sort of space exploration project, but things don't go quite as predicted all the time, and there are plenty of incidents on this six-year mission. And of course, you know, we do need some incident to keep us, I suppose, entertained. But it is very interesting the way that stuff they couldn't quite predict comes into play, and that equipment perhaps doesn't perform as well as they hoped. And it is very dramatic in places.
Yes, absolutely, it is. There are some very interesting things there, for sure. So, turning to our production notes.
Yep, we've got a chap called Tim Haynes, who was the producer of the very well-known BBC series Walking with Dinosaurs, which actually had a couple of series, and of course he went on to make Walking with Beasts and Walking with Monsters, so had a very successful run with this series.
Yes, there were a number of the Walking of series, Walking with Cavemen and so on. It was quite involved and very successful, starting in about 1999 or so and continuing for a number of years. And he proposed Walking with Spacemen to do something sort of similar to the other Walking with shows, but with space exploration. And of course, it turned out in the end they didn't do it as a Walking with, but they kept this idea and handed over most of the actual production to Christopher Riley, who had sort of specialized in history of science type TV documentaries.
Yeah, an interesting chap. I mean, I believe he actually started out as a planetary scientist himself before going into TV production. And interestingly for us on British Invaders, that after doing this show, he went on to be the scientific advisor to the BBC on their remakes of The Quatermass Experiment and A for Andromeda, both shows that we've talked about that had interest in sort of BBC projects in the 2000s.
Yes, interesting. From 2005 and 2006, so just a year or two after this.
And we've got the series actually been written and then directed by Joe Ahern. Now, Joe Ahern probably first came to attention for writing and directing on the show This Life. In terms of British Invaders, he's perhaps best known for doing the series about vampires that weren't called vampires, and that series was called Ultraviolet. But he's also made a show called Strange, and he has directed episodes of the new Doctor Who. And in particular, for the first series, he directed two very well-known and well-regarded episodes, Dalek and Father's Day. So, you know, lots of genre credits. And then here he is given the sort of writing and directing tasks for this big show.
Yes, he's an interesting person to take on a project like this, for sure. And it was done as a co-production between the BBC and the American Discovery Channel, which I believe was also the case with at least some, if not all, of the Walking With series. So it does sort of relate to those a little bit. And I believe, at least according to IMDb, this had a budget of about £4.5 million, which for a couple hours of TV is quite a significant budget that I think it was well used here.
Yeah, there's lots of stuff up on the screen. And there was lots of background preparation to be done as well. The cast and crew took themselves off to Russia and to Star City, the astronaut training facility there, where they went through a lot of the training that the astronauts actually have to take part in. And then, of course, we get these filmed weightless sequences. And, of course, I think as we're well familiar with now, these are filmed in a large Russian aircraft that's flying one of these huge sort of parabolic flight paths, which gives you, I don't know, is it about 30 seconds or so of weightlessness in each flight, Brian?
It's about 30 seconds of weightlessness in each pass. This was the largest plane that can do this this sort of thing. And each parabolic arc it runs gives you about half a minute of weightlessness. And between arcs in the same flight, you have about 3 minutes. But of course, before you go to the weightless, you have a period where you have about 2 G's of acceleration, and you go from that to weightlessness. So it's a fairly extreme way of doing things to get a zero gravity type effect. And it's the one way that you can do that without actually going into space. And they did a total of about 30 parabolic arcs and half a minute of filming on each one.
And it's that must have been quite some setup if you think of all the cast and crew and all their equipment. And as you say, Brian, they're pulling 2G and then they've got to be ready to switch straight away into filming mode once they get that brief period of weightlessness. Quite a production, I think.
And in some cases, in that 3-minute gap, they were doing costume changes and, you know, setting up the cameras to point to a different part of the set and so on.
Amazing.
Yeah, pretty elaborate setup to do that, for sure. And they had part of a set actually constructed inside the plane that was doing this parabolic arc. And they also, of course, had a green screen, so they would do some filming against the green screen in zero gravity and then add the backgrounds in, which I thought they did that very well. It was not too obvious when they used it. And then in other cases, they would actually be on this set of like a tunnel through the middle of the ship that they had in this aircraft that they could use on these parabolic arcs.
Fascinating. You know, the amount of effort and the effects that they manage from it is quite remarkable.
This was an extremely elaborate production, no question.
Yeah.
From the zero-G parabolic arcs they did, to training and studying not only in Star City in Russia, but in space-related facilities in the UK and elsewhere, and having people who were acting as scientific advisors from the Apollo program. They had an Apollo astronaut involved. They had, I believe, someone who was from Western Europe but flew on one of the Russian missions as a cosmonaut and was on Mir, the Mir space station, for some time. And then a number of space scientists as well. They had lots of people doing all of this consultation to help them design the mission, the ship, all of these different things. So it was really a lot of effort was gone to in order to make this a realistic speculative documentary.
Yes, fantastic.
And you had digital effects being done by an Oscar-winning company called Framestore. They did digital work for big films like The Golden Compass, The Dark Knight, Superman Returns, some of the Harry Potter films. So they actually did some very good work in there for some of the space imagery and planetary imagery and so on.
And also we've got some impressive sets. We've got some real actual locations, because then the crew moved from Russia to Chile, and in particular to the Atacama Desert, which they used to stand in for the surface of both Venus and then Mars. Although they had to wait for different weather conditions for each bit of filming. And you've got the astronauts, or the actors playing the astronauts, wearing very large and cumbersome suits in very hot environments. So again, I think challenging filming conditions, Brian.
Absolutely, for sure.
We've got an impressive musical score added to the program, which was written by Don Davis, who interestingly also wrote the music for the Matrix movies, and it's suitably dramatic.
Yes, it was performed by the BBC Orchestra, so it gave you something of the feel of the big orchestral scores that are used for a number of the BBC documentaries, the nature documentaries like Planet Earth and so on. So if you watch BBC documentaries, it helps to bring a bit of a familiar feel to it.
Yes, okay.
And this was broadcast on BBC One in November of 2004 in 2 50-minute episodes. And it was actually, I believe, a shorter version that was aired on American television on the Science Channel.
Yes, that's right. According to the Wikipedia page, the American broadcast chose a slightly different path for the crew. They reached a decision point, and I think the shorter version had them reaching an earlier decision to return home. The running time is slightly tricky to pin down as to what the American running time was and the British one, but it does seem that we had about 100 minutes or so here.
Yes, it actually would give you a little bit of a different feel by changing the decisions the astronauts make at different times and shortening it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it would make quite a difference to the program. But you get the full version on the DVD set we've been watching, which I guess brings us conveniently into the availability, Brian.
Yes, it does.
So we've been watching the DVD, which is a Region 2 version I've been watching, which lists the running time at about 117 minutes on my box, Brian. It includes the two episodes, obviously. It also includes several making of features. And there's also a supporting science program about the unmanned missions to all the planets that have taken place so far. And again, that was originally broadcast to support this show, and it's available here on the DVD. And you get all that for £15 here on Amazon.co.uk, and or you can rent it on the Love Film site. So you can get hold of this show pretty easily over here in Region 2.
And you can get a hold of it pretty easily over here in North America as well. There is a Region 1 version.
Woohoo!
Yes, and it has basically all of the same features on it. Now, the Region 1 box says 120 minutes, so I'm not sure of the exact calculations and running time and so on. And it sells for about $9 on Amazon.com and about $10 on Amazon.ca. So it's not an expensive one to pick up at all. And I would think it would be available from some of the rental services as well.
Good. So it is a nice, easy one for you to get hold of if you choose to watch it. We do have this running time mystery. I think what we can say is that both you and I, Brian, have been watching the longer version where the crew make the decision to push out even further into the solar system.
Yes, that's true. I think both DVD versions, I think, are somewhere around 2 hours.
And if you, by any chance, have seen the original North American version on the Science Channel and can tell us what happened there, we'd be very grateful to hear from you.
Yes, I didn't actually see that when it was broadcast in 2004, so it would be interesting to hear about that. And it would be interesting to hear if the American broadcast was narrated by David Suchet or narrated by someone else. Both the Region 1 and Region 2 DVD releases are narrated by him. I know the Walking With documentaries had different narrators on the American broadcasts. They had the American narrators instead of British narrators.
Oh, okay. Okay, so next time we will be discussing more of the crew's triumphs and setbacks as they travel to the outer reaches of the solar system.
And we will talk a little bit more about the science coverage in this show as well. And of course, we will get into some of our own reviews and recommendations as well. You can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.BritishInvaders.com. We are a member of the Geek Culture Network, so if you go to thegeekculturenetwork.com, you can find us there. We have a Facebook group as well, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will get us that way as well. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Until next time, it's Eamon in England also signing off.